You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. Okay, so today I have Kai Sato on the line, and he's general partner over at Mauloa. Kai, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. Good to be with you.
All right, Kai. So, hey, we're going to be heading on over to Atlantic City for the MicroCap conference. Some call it a concert, maybe, but for the conference. And hey, excited. I'm sure we're going to meet when we get out there, and got a whole lot to cover today. We'll be talking about, you know, three crucial phases for reaching 10 million in revenue and becoming cash flow positive, which a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of executives listening to this right now that are maybe stuck in that range, including myself. So excited to pick your brain on that. But before we get into all of that, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So Kai, we at Mission Matters, we're all about amplifying stories that we feel need to be heard. That's our mission. Kai, what mission matters to you?
I think the simplest way to put it down would be continuous learning and self-improvement as manifest through building companies. And so I think it's always about how do we affect change, you know, in ourselves and in our work, because I find it so important. But in order to do that, we have to keep getting better as individuals, as founders, as teammates. And so there's a term called Kaizen in Japanese, which is for continuous improvement. And not only is it part of my name, but my 2.5-year-old son's name is Zen. And so Kaizen is something that came from Toyota and is something that we kind of instill across the board in business and personal life, whether you're playing golf or anything in your life, just trying to keep getting better, maintain that humility, maintain that hunger. But it's always about how do you be the best you can be and not get too high, too low, but do the right thing day in and day out.
Well, great having you on here today, Kai. And just to dive right into the topic, you know, some show hosts use their, maybe a Howard Stern uses their show as kind of like for mental therapy about other things they got going on in their life. Well, for me, I use it for business therapy, let's call it. So why do so few companies ever reach, you know, over that 1 million mark, getting, let alone the 10 million mark? So we're stuck in between. I want to know, why do few companies ever reach these milestones?
It's really hard. And as an entrepreneur, made every mistake in the book, as an investor, as an advisor, it's certainly humbling. But generally, it really boils down to go to market. And I think the harsh reality that founders have to accept is the business can't get better until we as founders improve. And getting to that million mark, and only about 10% of companies ever reach that point. And that 10 million mark is about 1%. But something, and I didn't come up with this, is completely plagiarized and taken from people who are way better than I am.
Borrowed, Kai. We borrowed. This is media. We borrowed. Go ahead.
Imitation's the greatest form of flattery. But no, it's just making sure that you're going to market the right way. And so what does that mean? You know, so Bill Gurley, who's at Benchmark, he was at a conference that I attended years ago, and he just said, it's the thing that doesn't get talked about enough, whether it's consumer, whether it's enterprise, it doesn't matter. How you go to matter is so critical, because every day we're doing the wrong thing is burn rate, right? Is enabling us to fail. And so, you know, it is that fail fast modicum. But the reason why most companies don't get to that 1 million, especially the 10, is they're usually trying to do too much. People aren't able to focus on how to serve their customer and really zero in on that niche and then kind of keep growing and scaling. And so if you reverse engineer the greatest companies in the world, big things have always started small, whether it was Amazon selling books to the internet or Facebook starting on one college campus. So how you go to market is absolutely crucial. And it's generally, if you really look back, where things break down for a lot of teams and companies.
So So let's kind of look at maybe the last couple of years, just for an example of, let's just say, a moment in time. A lot of individuals, you know, started businesses out of necessity, right? Whether it's for context for everybody that's listening to this far into the future, and we're recording this in January 2024. Can't believe we're already in 2024. But, you know, a lot of people over the last couple of years, maybe they were displaced because of COVID or like just a lot of other things happened and they weren't really, you know, necessarily considering their quote unquote go to market. They were in, you know, survival mode, right? And maybe they had an idea, maybe they figured out a way to survive. And maybe now this idea is, you know, it worked. Like, and now they're thinking, hey, now what are my next steps? I know I didn't do any of this stuff right in the beginning, so to speak, but what I'm doing is working. So like, what do you say to like people that are kind of in that situation where they kind of started and now they're like, wait a minute, this is something I really want to focus on. Is it too late for them because they already went to market, or like, what are some thoughts on that?
Oh, it's never too late. And it's a common circumstance that companies find them in, founders find themselves in. But I'll just use a personal anecdote, right? We wrote a business plan while we were at USC, and ended up winning business plan prize, raised some money when we were young, set it on fire. And it wasn't because
that was fun, right?
It wasn't because we weren't working our tails off. It wasn't because we actually weren't finding success. The danger was we were finding success in the wrong market, right? And it's that elusive product market fit. And so the scenario that you described, and maybe it actually pertains to your business in some ways, is, hey, you're finding success. But then is that the beachhead from which you're going to keep building and build the kind of the empire that you envision? At least for us, we somehow wound up in an enterprise high compliance software environment, which was never what we set out to do. But, you know, you're trying to talk to anybody and get any form of traction you can and get customers. And no one kind of calls that time out. And this is why coaches are so valuable to sports teams and says, wait a minute, guys, like, are we even doing what we should be doing? And we are actually in a very random and fortuitous way, you know, ended up having a pivot somewhat led through Eric Ries when he was first promoting his book, The Lean Startup. And so all of these things kind of tie into that, to just whether you're using lean concepts or not. But there are so many entrepreneurs out there, they might be finding levels of success, but you kind of have to zoom out, have that vision of what you're doing, and then look at the here and now, the day to day. If your calendar isn't occupied with events that are going to further that ultimate vision, then it's probably time to call that time out. And it's super tough because you poured your life into it. Maybe you had some family money, friends, family, fools invested. Maybe, you know, you've got people working for you. It is really, really tough, but that's where you need these advisors or coaches or, you know, just a great relationship with your co-founders to work through it. And it's certainly not easy. And the hardest part about, I think, all of this is just being real with ourselves and being honest with ourselves about what's working, what's not, what we're good at, what we're not, and making sure that we're aligned with people who are complementary.
Hmm. Or maybe your calendar, it's even full, but maybe like, you know, not with the right activities or with the right things. So confusing being busy versus being like getting close to your goal, right? So a lot of different scenarios there. Mm-hmm.
That's it. And look, you know, we always hear about product market fit, and we should, because it's so important. One of the quotes that I loved on about it was actually from the new CEO who went into Peloton, and he comes from the venture world. And he said, look, finding product market fit is really hard. That's why this company achieved the success it did. Then it was in kind of turnaround triage mode post COVID. But to acknowledge how special that is, I've been a part of it as a founder, as an advisor, as a board member. You know when you have it, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows it's all working. It's clicking. You understand who your customer is, how we actually provide that value. There's scale to it. There's margin to it. It's magical. And you know, some of my friends who or other co-founders, you really know, and you can kind of talk about it. But for everybody else, until you've found that point, you just kind of got to keep going and make sure that you are aligned with, hey, this is our big vision, but we're building things incrementally. And so, you know, it's crazy. I'm a big nerd, and especially the history of companies. I love to know how they started, what trials and tribulations they endured. And like, Nintendo was a playing card game at one point in time. And so people just have to understand that, to your point, Adam, you can hit pause, you can pivot, you can do something else. You're only really limited, you know, by your creativity, your bandwidth, and your perseverance.
Yeah. And let's pick on the microcap sector. I say that affectionately, by the way, for all my CEOs out there. But why is it, you know, sometimes especially hard for this for the microcap sector to find maybe some of the, this elusive at times product market fit? Like, why do they sometimes have trouble?
It's a great question. It's because they have a very public scoreboard.
I've had like all these conversations about, you know, whether go pub, what, like what ways do you want to raise capital and otherwise? And I'm like, man, to have, you know, 8,000 or whatever the amount of investors are a company may have, whatever it is, throw the number in there, that many eyes looking at you. I'm like, wow, it's a lot. Go ahead, please.
It is. I've worked at a couple public companies, but I really gained proximity to the microcap space as I was pulled in as an advisor for a company that was really in turnaround mode, but we ultimately got it capitalized, ended up raising 20 plus million for it and taking it public on NASDAQ during my 2 year involvement. And as an investor, I'm a Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger nerd, and they were heavily invested in that space earlier in their careers. And so it was kind of this perfect union of having been in the startup world and scaling things that were in that arena, and then now doing that in the small public environment. And what you found is it's hard enough, like we said, to find product market fit and to focus on go to market, build a great culture that's focused on those really critical things. It's even harder when you're trying to talk to these investors and you're dealing with this vitriol, or maybe even you go into certain social networks that deal with a lot of retail investors or meme stock chasers, and to block that out. But again, if you just go back to the paradigms, there's a reason why someone like Jeff Bezos was so successful at this. When they went public in 97, he had this day one mentality, and he attached that first shareholder letter to every single shareholder letter for the rest of his duration as the CEO, because he wanted everyone to revert back and say, guys, this is our culture. This is our mentality. We're going to be the most customer-centric company in the world. And if you don't buy into that and you don't buy into that long-term, don't be a shareholder. And so you really do have to self-select. And I think it's really hard. And I've been pretty vocal in the microcap world, especially recently, and especially for events like this, this conference. I'm not talking about people who are trying to create some pharma business and you either get, you know, FDA approval and your company takes off. I'm talking about people who are building software, building products that are day by day building incrementally, much like any startup, but they happen to have a ticker, whether it's NASDAQ or NYC or OTC or all of these guys. And it's just so hard for microcaps. And I've been in these meetings, I've been a part of them, for us to block out IR, to, you know, to not deal with Wall Street. And you really have to look at the best, sure, how Amazon approached it. People like to point at Netflix, which was another microcap that really grew up. Walmart was a microcap. There are all these ones, but they were just so disciplined in building their core business and not getting caught up with the daily, weekly, monthly swings of stock price or market cap.
It's great insight. And one of the things that I do think is so interesting too, because, well, among many, but like the concept of that whole quarterly, you know, that quarterly accountability, then the, you know, the structure that it does, you know, instill for CEOs and for companies. It almost seems like that's the other side where if that was an issue an entrepreneur was having, not saying that that's a reason to go public, by the way, but obviously, but if that structure or that thought process, there is something to be said into that, that Wall Street training of things, right? Like I've always just been fascinated because I've never led a public company. You know what I mean? So it's just a little different.
Yeah. And I think that, look, there are so many great reasons to go public. And I'm a huge fan. I'm a bigger fan. That's why I've gotten involved in microcaps than the startup world. Right. Yeah. Because whether you're working there, you're an investor, you're advising them, you're a board member, there's so much more scrutiny and accountability, fiduciary responsibility. I've truly, look, there's 15,000 public companies, more or less, and half of them are technically microcaps. And back to Kaizen and building and creating jobs, like these companies, these small fish can turn into really big fish they're liquid. There are so many advantages if you're up for it and can execute it, but it's really hard. And look, I have an extra amount of empathy for what companies are going through right now, because much like venture, where money was free for a long time and now it isn't, and everything's getting reset, that's even more difficult for microcaps, right? And a lot of them won't make it. If they can't raise more money and kind of survive, then they're going to struggle. But it's this weird balance. And this is probably one of the things that I most look forward to getting into at the conference. When you talk to really good, disciplined, long-term value investors focused on microcap, they want the same thing that a lot of microcap CEOs are trying to say or trying to do, but there just continues to be the disconnect, right? Like they want this dedicated, visionary leader who wants to build a culture and wants to take care of customers, right? They want those things. So it's almost like this misalignment on a dating site or a marketplace, because they're all looking for the same thing and trying to be that thing, but only the most disciplined and the most capable. And look, it takes luck, are able to execute it and pull it off. But I do think SPACs included, some of them that have gone public and lost a lot of their market cap, there are going to be some companies that emerge from this, because we saw it in 2001, and I know a lot of guys who did well at that. We're going to see the same thing, right? And maybe it's going to require a PIPE financing or something, or maybe some are going to have to restructure or whatever they're going to do. But there are going to be some microcaps that emerge from a really tumultuous last couple of years in the public markets, and that are going to become juggernauts. And so that's all I want to talk to with some of these companies, is just thinking through not only your go-to-market, not only kind of ignoring a lot of the distractions that IR can be, but also looking at your board, making sure that they're invested, right? They're not just there because it looks flashy on a LinkedIn profile, that they're there for a reason, and most commonly are cutting a check as well. So just aligning incentives and doing it again, borrowing, plagiarizing the way that guys like Buffett have done it throughout their entire careers. It just kind of baffles me when it isn't adhered to.
And the other side of that, we've been speaking a lot from the CEO and, you know, that side of the discussion. But what you're talking about in terms of some of these companies emerging, which I agree with that, by the way, I subscribe to that idea that, you know, some of these microcap companies are going to emerge and be some real winners. And for the investor side of things, for the investors out there that are looking at, you know, allocating some of their portfolio or thinking or digging, because I know at the conference there'll be investors in attendance as well, it becomes interesting for them as well to be involved with something maybe a little bit, you know, earlier on, and to do it and to make connections with CEOs and to have maybe a little bit more of a closer relationship with the company at an earlier stage. So I feel like for investors, for whatever percentage they're putting into microcap, it becomes an interesting hunt for them, so to speak, as well, on what's the next company that they feel is going to be the right fit.
Mm-hmm. I think you're completely right. And you think about high net worth, or especially family offices, they don't have to become beneficial owners, but depending on the market cap and the check size, mm-hmm. in all likelihood, they will. They'll own a significant chunk, but you can have a lot of say. And again, just going back to the early days of Buffett pre-Berkshire, but Berkshire was actually technically a market cap that he took over as an activist, mm-hmm. and has long held, but there was Sanborn Maps and Dempster Mill. There's several others. You have that opportunity right now. And I think it takes the right management, right? Because ultimately you're backing the right horse here, and you want to make sure that you're aligned. And there are certain microcap CEOs we know that are out there that it is kind of meme stockish, and they just want to be in the trades, and they want to see their market cap surge and kind of get out of it. But for the people who are really trying to build day by day, who are ideally invested themselves, who are trying to surround themselves with a real board and ideally a board that's also invested itself, I think those will be the ones that really persevere and survive, not just, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now.
I think that's a good way to call it, Kai. I appreciate you coming on the show. If somebody's listening to this and they want to connect and, you know, continue the conversation or learn more about Mauloa, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. They can just go to maualoainc.com or reach out to us or me individually on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. And to the audience that are tuning in, hey, if you haven't done it yet, hit that subscribe button. I don't know what you're waiting for. We got many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. So definitely hit that subscribe button so you can catch all the content we have planned for you. And Kai, hey, again, looking forward to seeing you at the Microcap Conference, and thanks for this pre-interview.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Take care.